This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 30th of January 2026. Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I introduce our readers for this week, Deborah Cranmer.
Hello.
Richard Martin.
Hello.
Jackie Donnellan.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Peter Lydiard. First of all, I'd like to thank those members of the Talking Newspaper who took over my role the end of last year when I was in hospital. Thank you very much for stepping in at very short notice. I'm pleased to say I'm on the road to recovery. So our usual regular notices. The first is to say if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That is 01962 861229, and this number can also be found on the key fob attached to your memory stick. As you listen to the recording, remember that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, apart from using the memory stick and the box provided, you can load it onto your own device. You can also access this recording through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com, and the recording is also available on Southampton Community Radio stations Awaz Radio and Fiesta FM. So we go on to our headline stories. The first will be from Deborah, which says, "Public view divided over River Park."
Yes, 250 people see ideas for redundant leisure centre, and the article is accompanied by a photograph of the old leisure centre, and all the roads around are flooded. Winchester residents have had their chance to share their views on the future of River Park Leisure Centre. Winchester City Council presented 12 potential uses of the site at a drop-in session on Tuesday, January the 27th. The event at the Guildhall attracted 250 people to learn more about the uses, with opinions being split. Abbots Barton resident Andrew Hadlington, 61, said, "I think the church idea is a waste of time, and I think the care home is probably no good." He added, "All the sports stuff and the other stuff, such as the Lido, is very interesting. I don't know how a developer is going to come in and make some money with this. Sports, Lido, or some community use, those are the best ones. I think the Lido is what I'm most interested in, whether it's in a sports centre or something else." Jacob Hodgkiss, 28 of Jury Street, said he wanted to see the space turned into a music venue. He said, "I'd really like a music venue, that or one of the other ideas, such as the Lido, but we usually associate Lido with summer. But with a music venue, that has a year-round use. A care home might be nice, but we have quite a few of those around here already. I'm not against it." Linda Nightingale, 72, of Broadway, said she would be interested in the space being used as a craft space, saying there is a demand for it. "I don't want it to be a church. Winchester has lots of them already. I don't think a care home would work." Luke Ainscough from Kingsworthy said that he had no strong opinion on what the River Park site is used for, as long as it has a community use. He said, "I don't think we needed a new leisure centre, the one in Bar End. If they'd maintained this one, they'd have been able to keep it. I'd like to see something that is for the wider community. I used to benefit from living near River Park when I was younger." There are a lot of suggestions about paddle courts. "I'm not really into it, but I can see that people like it. I'm not sure I'm very gripped by any of the ideas." Winchester resident Charles Pascal, 71, said that he was strongly against the idea of the space being used for a care home. He said, "Some of the ideas really appall me. If you read the 1902 covenant, it says that the land may only be used for recreational and scientific purposes. It also says that the land cannot be used for residential use. As previously reported, Winchester City Council has had 12 expressions of interest in the River Park site from different organisations. The proposed potential uses for the site are a care home, paddle rackets with coffee shop, soft play and a public exhibition space, music or performance space with sports offer, church with multifunction community space, fitness facility with restaurant and outdoor lido, paddle pickleball, community sports hub, education facility for primary years, indoor football and paddle, health club, rackets, gym, leisure, paddle pickleball centre with potential lido and indoor football, health and wellness club, gym. The next stage is for formal bids with more detail and business cases.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Meanwhile, security is stepped up at redundant leisure centre.
Mm-hmm.
Security is being beefed up at River Park Leisure Centre after a spate of antisocial behaviour. The empty centre has been targeted by urban explorers who posted clips on social media, and fires have been started in the building, which has been empty since 2021. Winchester's police chief told city councillors that a plan of action to protect the building was being drawn up after a meeting last week. Chief Inspector Corinne Bishop said a security firm was now patrolling four times a day. Motion sensors are being installed to give instant alert to trespassers. He said that if people enter the building, there will be consequences for them. City Councillor John Tippett Cooper, who lives nearby, praised the police for their work. He drew attention to the vandalism of the nearby electricity base station, which means the area is very dark after dusk. He said he called 999 after seeing children in danger on the building. A Scottish and Southern Electric Networks SSEN distribution spokesperson said, "Our engineers have visited the River Park Leisure Centre site to assess whether the issues with the street lighting in its car park relate to the SSEN distribution network. This visit has confirmed that the street lighting for the car park is privately owned and operated and is fed from the disused leisure centre itself, which is no longer connected to the SSEN distribution network. We'd be happy to hear from Winchester City Council if it wishes to make an application to reconnect any of the facilities it remains responsible for at this site." Local campaigner Rose Burns commented, "Whatever the result of the public consultation on the future of the leisure centre site, it is high time for the redundant, derelict building to be demolished. It may be several years until an acceptable, viable, community-driven purpose is determined, and in the meantime, we have a safety hazard." Councillor Tippett Cooper said on the Chronicle website, "A number of the 12 expressions of interests include proposals to repurpose part of the building, but yes, once agreement has been reached with the preferred partner, which should be by the summer this year, it's important work start as soon as possible, including any demolition works if necessary."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, your headline piece, please.
Hospital delay until 2046, truly shocking. It could be two decades before Hampshire's new hospital is built, a new report has revealed, delaying the vital facility by a shocking 15 to 16 years from the government's original promise. A new report from the National Audit Office has revealed that a new hospital in Basingstoke, which would see Winchester's emergency department downgraded, may be delayed until 2045 to 46, despite Basingstoke originally promised a new hospital by 2030. The report, published on January the 16th, details that the earliest estimated Hampshire hospital opening date is 2045 to 2046. Alex Brewer, MP for North East Hampshire, labelled the latest delay as truly shocking. She launched a petition calling on the government to accelerate the plans and questioned the Prime Minister on the delays. In particular, the £700 million or more of maintenance spend required to keep buildings functioning over the next 20 years. She said, "It is truly shocking that patients are having vital treatment delayed because our underfunded hospitals are in disrepair. Patients and hard-working NHS staff are fed up of sewage leaks, crumbling ceilings and bucket-strewn wards. The government must go further and faster to deliver safe modern hospitals for local people. Patients don't need more delays, they need urgent action, long-term funding and a guaranteed programme to fix, rebuild and replace hospital buildings." She is calling for immediate funding to get the hospital built, with a 10-year investment plan. Luke Murphy, MP for Basingstoke, said, "The new hospitals programme, announced by Boris Johnson in 2020, promised 40 new hospitals, but was delayed by years and not a single new hospital had been constructed by the time the Conservatives left office. Rather than mislead the public, as the previous government did, this government has sought to put in place a practical plan to deliver, even if that has meant a much longer timeline than expected." He said he will continue to work closely with government ministers, the Hospital Trust, the Integrated Care Board and the local partners to move this project forward in practical, tangible ways. He said he has helped to successfully secure the funds needed to purchase the land for the new hospital at Junction 7 of the M3, which is expected to be bought before the end of March this year.
Thank you, Jackie. My headline story is City Streets Are Slammed as a Disgrace. A Worcester resident has branded the state of the streets as disgraceful with a lack of effect in clearing dangerous leaf fall and weeds. Fred White urged the town forum to press the county council for better clearing of leaves in the winter. Mr. White of Sussex Street said, "Can this forum persuade the council to clean up leaves? In some places, they are quite dangerous. Can they clean the weeds too, as the town is not looking very good? It is quite disgraceful and not good for the city. We need more pride in our roads and our streets." As well as Sussex Street, Mr. White cited College Street and Bishop's Palace, Wharf Hill, as the problem spots. He said local people had cleared the leaves in Sussex Street next to the County Council headquarters. "We cleaned up ourselves, which we've done for the last few years. We put the leaves back on the County Council side of the road, but the leaves were blown back onto our side." Councillor Chris Westwood, chair of the forum, said, "There are a lot of trees around the city. There is a period when an awful lot of trees shed their leaves. I live in Cheriton Road and we have got some enormous trees and you could be ankle deep in leaves of certain..." There's a misprint here, it says certain pints of the year. I think it's points of the year. He said most roads and pavements are the responsibility of the county council. The city council does a lot of leaf clearance on its land, but planning is difficult at this time of year for major falls, varies with climate change complicating things. Councillor Westwood urged people to use the Clean My Street app. He did so, and the problem leaf fall was cleared within 24 hours. I didn't know that.
No.
Well, now, as usual, we go on to death notices, starting with Deborah, please.
East, Margaret East, peacefully on the 1st of January, aged 85.
Goldring, Peter John Goldring, on the 28th of December, aged 85.
Hyde Cooper, Rita Hyde Cooper, née Newell, formerly Henley, suddenly on the 30th of December, aged 70.
Kerr, Anne Isabel Kerr, née Shaw, peacefully at Abbots Barton Care Home, 11th of January, aged 96.
Lewis, Audrey Lewis, on the 16th of January, aged 90.
Percival, Sylvia Eileen Percival, known as Sylv, peacefully on the 14th of January, aged 90.
Phillips, Gloria Phillips, peacefully at Alston House Care Home on the 13th of January, aged 87.
Royal, Patrick Royal, known as Pat, husband of the late Anne Royal of Willow Court, Alton, peacefully, 11th of January.
Watts, Gillian Ruth Watts, peacefully at Ridgemead Care Home on the 17th of December, aged 85.
Whitmarsh, Paula Jane Whitmarsh, peacefully on the 9th of January, aged 70.
Thank you. Now we go on to Christian comment, read by Jackie, please.
And it's called Opportunity for Space and Quiet Reflection by Nigel Hemming. In January, I went on a soul care retreat, an opportunity for space, quiet reflection, and the odd walk when the rain stopped. It felt like a luxury in the first week of a new year. We had hardly got started after the seasonal festivities, and yet we took time out to rest, read, think, and pray. To be honest, it was just what I needed. We were gently guided through various reflective exercises, and it was during one of these sessions I found myself meditating on the Apostle Paul's stunning encouragement in Romans chapter 8. Can anything separate us from the love of Christ? Can trouble, suffering and hard times, or hunger and nakedness, or danger and death? In everything we have won more than a victory because of Christ who loves us. And that's verses 35 to 37. I'm only too aware that my own circumstances are a long way away from those of Paul's original audience. The physical struggles were real for Christians in Rome in the AD 60s. They experienced persecution ranging from suspicion, slander, and hostility at best to state-sanctioned murder at worst. I'm also mindful of believers in countries today where following Jesus is difficult and fraught with danger. And yet, Paul's words are universally true, whatever our circumstances. I have so much to be thankful for, but some things can make me feel anxious from time to time. And especially as I grow older, will I be healthy and live long? Will I be thought of as a success? Will I take enough risks? Will I make my mark on the world? Will I have the resources I need, materially or emotionally? Will I finish the things I'm meant to do? Dealing with these and other very real questions, I have come to realise that the battles I face take place in my mind and my heart. To win those victories, I need to be alert to the threat and know where my own vulnerabilities lie. When I make time to read and reflect on the truth of God's word, I find that the love of Jesus can transcend all of my fears. The modern day Message translation of verse 37 is, "None of this fazes us because Jesus loves us." The more I dwell on that reality, the less anxious I become. As has become my custom lately, I found myself trying to capture this in my own words in the form of a poem. I share it here in case it brings encouragement. Unfazed, nothing in this world or any other world can ever come between me and the steadfast love of God. Through every storm and battle in my fragile heart and mind, this truth is worth repeating till it forges with my will that I'm never separated, and no matter what I'm feeling, that the all-embracing, sacrificing, power-wielding, danger-shielding, precious love of Jesus will always be enough to remind me of the victory I've already more than won against anything that comes, powerfully connected, loved, and protected. And that's by Nigel Hemming, the senior pastor of the Winchester Vineyard Church.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to letters to the editor, starting with Deborah, please.
The first letter is from Andrew McMurtry, and it's entitled Sensible Move. The decision not to proceed with the development around Winchester Station is prudent. Could Winchester City Council please now remove the extensive temporary fencing in the approach to the station? For the last couple of years, this has been an unimpressive welcome for those visiting Winchester. Concern about paving stones rising from tree root growth could easily be addressed with the use of flexible matting. Andrew McMurtry, Monk's Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
And Philip Gagg, in a similar vein, says, chance to reset. For many people, the delay in redeveloping the station area will be disappointing, Chronicle January 22nd. One compensation is that it allows us to reset fundamentally our priorities for the area. We should recognise it as the only place where we can enable good, effective connections between trains and buses. Excuse me. Trains and buses, and reserve enough space in the development to do this. The current desultory offering on Station Hill of a bus stop in each direction, only for bus routes that go along Romsey Road, does not encourage more than a handful of the 4.6 million Winchester Railway Station passengers a year, more than 15,000 on a busy day, to begin or end their railway journeys with bus connections. There's a need for buses in all directions. We need to provide more space for bus routes to terminate at the station. In Bath, for example, there's a comfortable bus interchange with 16 bus bays next to the station. And Winchester Railway Station has 70% of the passengers that Bath has. The railway station is probably by far the largest potential source of bus passengers in Winchester, yet bus companies do little to attract them. Perhaps they're still driven by old rivalries with trains, but this is no longer relevant. Buses and trains should work together to tackle the real competition, private cars. Much needs to be done to make bus services more attractive for railway passengers. Better maps, timetables that start earlier and end later for longer journeys, and that connect with trains. Good signage to bus routes nearby, and revised routes that serve the station just as well as they serve the city centre. The Winchester Movement strategy should redesign traffic flows to make bus rerouting easier. At the very least, buses from Alsford and Bishop's Waltham should be extended to terminate at the station. The extra staffing costs would be justified by extra passengers. With more passengers, buses could offer a better service for everybody. Let's make sure the new Hampshire and Solent mayor will use their strategic powers to bring in these changes. Phil Gagg, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Rob Hawes in Kingsworthy writes, an accident waiting to happen. I want to draw attention to Hampshire County Council withdrawing the school bus service from Kingsworthy to Henry Beaufort School later this year. The reason given is that due to the King's Barton estate, the walking distance is now just under the three-mile limit, so up to 170 pupils will be expected to walk 6 miles a day through areas of heavy traffic flow that are unlit and cross roads on bends that have bad driver visibility, walk through a road tunnel that does have traffic lights but is not designed to allow pedestrians to pass safely, let alone this number of children to pass through safely, and finally, to walk across footpaths that are not fit for purpose, especially in adverse weather conditions when they become flooded and muddy. This is not to mention the physical and mental stress that will be put on these students. So I ask Hampshire County Council to give us the real reason that they are withdrawing this school bus service and reconsider their decision. For what they are proposing really is an accident waiting to happen. And that's from Rob Hawes, the pastors in Kingsworthy. And there's a photo of a group of campaigners on a footpath outside the Henry Beaufort School sign. And they've just walked the route from Kingsworthy in December.
Thank you, Jackie. This letter is written by Chris Gillam and it's headed Toll Too High. A pedestrian was recently killed on Stockbridge Road, Chronicle January the 15th. This week I learned of an old friend killed as a pedestrian in Oxford. I do not know the circumstances of these accidents, but I do ask why society accepts so readily the toll of injury and death on our roads. The government collects data designed to focus on recording factors related to areas where action can be taken. The 2024 statistics record that 59% of fatalities are attributed in whole or in part to excessive speed. 52% to other bad behaviour and 34% to distraction or impairment. These are not natural hazards of the world we live in. They are behavioural factors that society tolerates. Action that can be taken is not taken. Most of the political parties, apart from the Greens, clearly either consider the death toll as a price worth paying or just do not want to think about it. The Reform Party and the Conservative Party actively criticised the Welsh Government's attempts to reduce excessive speed, the overwhelming cause of serious road accidents. The Lib Dems are generally in favour of a move towards speed reduction, though very little actually happens as a result of its policy, while the English Labour government characteristically sits on the fence. Why do we put the interests of irresponsible motorised road users above the lives of our citizens to a degree comparable to wartime? Road deaths since World War II are roughly the same as our military fatalities in that war. If we suddenly woke up and learned that 1,600 people were killed and 30,000 seriously injured per year as a result of accidental gunshot wounds, would we let our government tolerate it, as it does with road accidents? What do we get out of it all? Our road transport system does not contribute beneficially to our economy. Our air is poisoned. Our streets are deafening. Our urban spaces are dominated by cars and car parks instead of people. The access to our towns by efficient public transport is limited. Our countryside is despoiled and our climate is threatened. A price worth paying? Written by Chris Gillam of Upper High Street, Winchester. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Martin C. Pittman. Not a shock. It is nothing less than naive fallacy to complain that last week's announcement regarding further delays for Hampshire's new hospital is truly shocking. It was completely and utterly predictable. I personally took every feasible opportunity during the woeful and hideously expensive public consultation for the White Elephant Hampshire Together project to highlight that the funding stream for the shiny new build hospital had not been secured and was very far from guaranteed. The project's lacklustre leadership team, aided and abetted by their vote-desperate pre-election local politicians Brine, Drummond, Malthouse, Miller and even the lofty Lord Markham, who headed up the new hospital's programme, knew better, were patronisingly dismissive, but were actually being little more than economical with the truth. So the stark reality now is that the foundations on the apparently secured site, predictably just outside Basingstoke, another issue which will not be dug at best until three general elections' time, when who knows which political party will be in power, where they will stand on the NHS, and more to the point, what state the country's public finances will be in. The game plan of the Hampshire Hospital Foundations Trust senior management has, and always will be, to downgrade acute services in the Winchester Royal Hampshire County Hospital site. The population of Winchester should be under no illusion whatsoever that they now face the very worst of both worlds, as this resolve and determination is realised and strengthened. I have no doubt at all that plans will already be well underway to centralise acute medical services, such as maternity, paediatrics, A&E and pathology, onto the existing Basingstoke site. Plans that would prove devastating for the Winchester residents. This great city's population and MP need to prepare in order to preserve their local health provision. Martin C. Pittman, ex-consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist, South Wanston.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Well, a very different matter. Marion Wade has hounds of fear. I'm a senior citizen and no longer ride, but my main enjoyment of the winter months, which are, for our generation, very testing, with little to do and most of the time spent indoors, is following the Hursley-Hambledon trail hunt by car. It gives us a marvellous opportunity to follow hounds and horses and have an enjoyable and perfectly legal day out. If this was stopped, our winters would be bleak indeed. Of course, there is too the question of what will happen to the hounds. This seems to be a question that's not asked, because no one would like to answer. As a nation of dog lovers, I'm sure that even some of the anti-trail hunting brigade would be horrified if they thought that they had contributed to the euthanasia of approximately 5,000 hounds. The turnout for hunts across the country on Boxing Day demonstrated the level of support for our sport among the public. If it passes, it will damage the lives of the many people who currently depend on it for company, community, and general well-being, and destroy a tradition that's been part of our British heritage for hundreds of years. Marilyn Way, Southend Lane, Sobert.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie.
I have a call for help from David M. Willits. I am on the closing stages of writing the history of the Winchester Brewery Company at 83 Hyde Street from 1941 to 1998. When I have finished my task, I shall be handing everything over to the Hampshire Record Office in Sussex Street. But I still have a mystery unsolved and wonder if any reader has the answer. The site at 83 Hyde Street was sold to Banner Homes, who no longer exist. They called their development Winchester Gate. As we all know, it is now in fact called Marston Gate in recognition of the last of the four breweries that were on that site between 1704 and 1998. Does any reader know why there was the name change, and when did it happen? My late father Donald was the managing director of the company until his retirement in 1961. Thus, my task will contain all the things he told me about, particularly the World War II years, cuttings, photographs and personal memories from when the family lived at Northgate, 86 Hyde Street. Authors, journalists and historians who may not even be born can now research the site, knowing the information is all first-hand. If any reader has the answer to my story, I would be very grateful if they would drop me a line. So that's David M. Willits, Flat 34, Palermo Court, 3 Durlichyne Road, Bournemouth.
Thank you, Jackie. I think on a point of order, it's not the High Street, that address is on the corner of Hyde Street and North Walls.
Yes.
Anyway. Who am I to question it? My letter, the next letter, is written by Brock and Kathleen Numidor. Love your city. This last year, my family and I travelled to Winchester from the United States. We stayed for a week, centred on Easter. It was a huge trip and a big deal for us. We had an excellent time. Your city is beautiful. Your people are wonderful. Our daughter is in a wheelchair, and we anticipated a fair bit of struggle with that, being that most of what we wanted to see is hundreds of years old, but everything and everyone were accommodating and understanding. You all were so much better at that than we are. We very much enjoyed our time in your city and would love to visit again in the future. I just wanted to drop a little note and say thank you. That's from Brock and Caitlin Numidor of West Upton Avenue, Reed City, Michigan, USA. Deborah, please.
And the next letter is from Helen Young on the subject of bus services. I live in Bishopstoke, but before I was given a mobility car, the number 61 bus was my lifeline to Winchester Hospital. So much cheaper than parking. They have blue buses to Southampton Hospital, so it's only fair to put this one back in place. I'm disabled, but I rely on buses. The next route I'd like to see is Eastleigh to Chandler's Ford. For example, my daughter lives on Velmore Estate. Her doctor is in Chandler's Ford. Too far to walk. No bus route. Plenty of empty stops, though she has to pay for a taxi. It's unfair, I feel, for pensioners and people that don't drive. It's an offence in my eyes, and neglecting public needs. As for the bus that goes hourly from Eastleigh to Chandler's Ford, Monday to Friday, but stops at 2:30 p.m. and won't pick up customers, still does the same route. Waste of fuel, but runs all day on a Saturday. It's a joke. Helen Young, Bishopstoke.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Duncan Hodgson warns of danger ahead. We're witnessing something very sinister with the Online Safety Act 2023, as this could introduce digital ID by the back door for all ages. We see that Labour have backed down on introducing mandatory digital ID because it was so unpopular, but it seems they won't give up the idea of introducing it more softly at a later date. This was never about protecting children from harms of social media, which is a very serious issue. It was always about sneaking digital ID by the back door. Our country's getting wrecked by the advances of technology, and I don't recognise it anymore. We need to save it before it's too late.
Who's that written by?
Duncan Hodgson.
Thank you.
From Eastleigh.
From Eastleigh, thank you. Please.
I have a letter entitled Smart Working, and it's written by Peter D. Jenner, the former head teacher of the Westgate School. I would like to congratulate head teacher Mrs. Dean and the Westgate School on the decision to ban smart devices on the school site. The Westgate has long been acknowledged as a very caring school, so although bans can seem oppressive, not so, I would argue, in this case. Smartphones can become alarmingly addictive for the owner, an addiction that has the potential to cause harm. I hope other local secondary schools will follow the Westgate lead. Clearly, other factors like health needs are being taken into account, so I wish the school well on its brave and positive step. Protection of the pupils is just one of the requirements of a caring school. So that's from Peter D. Jenner, head teacher of the Westgate School from 1982 to 2006, Carthagena, Sutton Scotney.
Thank you, Jackie. So that's the end of the letters for this week. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That is 01962 860836. Or you can email them on news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can also write to the editor, 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we have editorial comment read by Richard, please.
Thank you. Are we going to agree on whether it's called a Lido or a Lido?
You choose.
I'll try Lido this time.
Okay.
At last, a chance for Lido in the city? Our front page story reports on the drop-in session that the City Council organised on Tuesday to air ideas for the future use of the redundant River Park Leisure Centre. 12 ideas are on the table, ranging from a care home and church to sports and health activities, including a Lido. The ideas come from the expressions of interest put forward by the various parties late last year. The council is to be congratulated in organising such an event, and around 250 people responded to discuss the proposals. The high number shows the level of public interest. These are early days, but things start getting serious with formal bids to come forward and interested parties to submit formal bids and put forward business cases. Several of the ideas are distinctly underwhelming, such as church and care home. Another idea is for an education facility primary years, which we are sure St Bede's School next door will be looking at. The Chronicle has said it before, but we would like to see the area retain its recreational use in the spirit of the 1902 purchase of the land for a park. The Council has stressed, and it is worth repeating here, that the scheme will not affect the skate park or the indoor bowling building. This newspaper would very much like to welcome a Lido, an outdoor swimming pool. Critics have said it's a summer-only activity, but experience elsewhere shows there is a growing demand for all-year-round outdoor swimming. It would improve the area considerably, as the current leisure centre, even before its near dereliction, was a pretty drab 1980s structure. Allowed there would also be something completely different that would energise the city and bring a lot of welcome publicity. Now is the time for the Lido advocates to put in a bid, which will be evaluated in April, May, before another drop-in event in May or June. A preferred bidder is due to be identified by June. But what do you think? Write to letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk.
Thank you, Richard. Now, I've got the opinion piece, which this week is written by Khalid Aziz, and it's headed American Nightmare. What to do about the Bulgarian who currently occupies the White House? I spent last weekend wrangling this conundrum with two Americans we were hosting here in Hampshire. They were both disgusted at the latest outrages perpetrated by President Trump's henchmen in Minneapolis and other US cities. Up to now, many have viewed the ramblings of the state supreme leader with incredulity, tinged with a certain amount of amusement as we witnessed the bumbling idiocy of Trump's Tourette-like outpourings. However, he crossed a line last week. There is nothing amusing about suggesting that NATO troops sloped their shoulders in Afghanistan, leaving their American counterparts to do the heavy lifting. 457 fallen British soldiers and countless others seriously wounded tell a different story. We are justifiably incensed by such vile and clearly false utterances. Trump, allegedly having been put straight by a homegrown Trump whisperer, Sir Keir Starmer, slightly rode back via his rather undignified, preferred hide-behind channel Truth Social, calling our troops heroes. What would he know about heroism? There was no apology. I can do no better than to point to the recently retired Chief of the Defence Staff, General Sir Nick Carter's eloquent contribution delivered with cold fury on the Today programme. The US Commander-in-Chief is ill-equipped to pass any kind of comment on military matters, having dodged the US draft 5 times. Of course, politicians' bombast is nothing new. Just after the end of World War II, the Allies gathered to map out their future. The contingent from the USA, those days they were rather more enthusiastic about seeing Europe as the first line of defence against the growing malevolence of post-war Stalinist Russia, were keen to establish US bases in Western Europe. General de Gaulle, not noted for his generosity of spirit, or indeed gratitude to those who fought to liberate his country after it had fallen to the Nazis, thumped the table and announced that he wanted all US soldiers removed from French soil. There was stunned silence, broken only when a US officer quietly inquired if that would include all the GIs who were buried in France. But those were different times. American politicians, and indeed, with a few exceptions, most politicians had a much deeper veneer of civility. Trump, I am sure, could barely spell the word, let alone put it into practice. So, what to do? Those protesters peacefully confronting Trump's ICE thugs in Minneapolis, Chicago, and Los Angeles may just turn the tables. This revolution is certainly being televised, and with smartphones, everyone's a video journalist. Many ICE men were starting to look distinctly uncomfortable about being recorded brutalising their fellow citizens. Sadly, as we have seen, it only takes one or two to indulge their psychopathic tendencies. Tragedy is just around the corner. My American guests were in despair. Other American friends emailed to tell me how disgusted they are with what their country has become. In the absence of a Trump apology, some offered me their own. One Vietnam veteran was appalled at the egregious rubbishing of the bravery of comrades in arms. I was particularly taken with the story of US senators who recently flew to Ottawa to see Canadian Premier Mark Carney, Canadian snowbirds who are no longer flying south to winter in Florida. Other Canucks have stopped flipping across the border for weekend breaks. American tourism has lost to date over $5 billion and counting. Might Carney intervene? Apparently, he shrugged his shoulders. So there is apparently something we can do. Until further notice, I am ditching my credit card with the US-sounding name. There are other burger joints than those with golden arches, other chicken shops not named after a southern state. It might just lengthen your life. If enough people withdraw their custom, we'll be speaking the only language Trump and his pariah kleptocrats understand. Right, we now go on to Belgarum, which, as you probably recall, is an alternative look at the news. The first from Deborah, please.
Yes, this is an article called Three Rescued from the Hill, and it's accompanied by a very nice photograph of a sort of rather fluffy Highland cow. Three people had to be rescued from a hill in Hampshire after the area's Highland cows went viral on social media. The group became disorientated on Butser Hill on Saturday, January the 24th, amid bad weather conditions and fading daylight. Crews from Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service attended in fading daylight as rain and falling temperatures set in, making conditions even more hazardous. Steve Jenkins, station manager, said, "Social media posts often show the Highland cows and panoramic views, but rarely reflect the physical effort or preparation required to reach them. The terrain can be challenging, especially during the winter, when poor weather conditions are more frequent and the daylight hours are limited. The area is covered in thick gorse, and the wet weather has made the ground very slippery. Without proper preparation, visitors are at risk of slips, falls, and hypothermia. We're glad no one was harmed during this incident, but it highlights the risks of visiting an exposed downland environment where conditions can change rapidly." The group had become disorientated amid bad weather conditions and fading daylight before being found with the help of the What Three Words app.
Oh. Thank you. Jackie, the second piece from Belgarum, please.
Entitled, "They're Back, and It's Still a Headache." They're back, and to be honest, probably never went away. Despite efforts by the City Council, the pigeons are still chilling out in the roof space at Hyde Gate. Contractors have been putting up obstacles, but the birds are still able to overcome any obstacles for where they want to go. The Town Forum recently addressed heritage issues with updates on the restoration of the Buttercross, but little was said about the bird problem. Meanwhile, Councillor John Tippett Cooper told the Town Forum the aim is to start work on restoration of the collapsed wall near Hyde Gate later this year. The wall collapsed after heavy rainfall in July 2021, and there's a picture of the pigeons under the eaves in Hyde Gate, and it looks like they're very comfortably nestled behind the mesh that's been put up to stop pigeons sitting there.
Thank you, Jackie. Now we go on to items which may interest you coming up in the near future. First one from Deborah, please.
High Notes with Bach. A concert is set to bring Baroque music and historic horns to life in a special performance in Winchester. Song and Schild, Bach with Brass, will take place at St Paul's Church in Full Flood from 4 till 6 p.m. on Sunday, February the 1st, in support of the University of Southampton's Gift of Sight appeal. The concert will feature three of Bach's cantatas performed on period instruments. Annika Scott, a specialist in historic horn, will join the ensemble for the performance. She said, "These are some of the most fantastic and challenging cantatas that Bach writes for the horn, so it's a great thrill to be playing them again in this concert. I'm very much looking forward to performing them with Bach Winchester Voices. The programme will include Dazu ist ein... sorry, I didn't look this ahead. Dazu ist ein Schienen, which tells the story of Christ conquering the serpent, as well as Gott der Herr ist Sohn und Schild, and part four of the Christmas Oratorio, written for New Year's Day. Andrew Heyman will direct the event, which features Bach Winchester Voices and orchestra, performing with authentic Baroque horns and professional soloists. John Newman, founder of Bach Winchester Voices and a Crawley resident, said the group was proud to support the Gift of Sight appeal. John said, "As musicians, we rely on our vision to enable us to read and perform Bach's remarkable manuscripts. We're very pleased to support Professor Andrew Lottery's team, whose research is helping to develop new treatments that will save sight for future generations." The University of Southampton's Gift of Sight appeal raises funds for research to prevent blindness caused by common eye conditions. Events such as this concert help to advance that research. Bach Winchester Voices combines the original Crawley Bachistas with professional musicians and singers from across the UK and beyond. Soloists for the evening will include Jesse Edgar, soprano, Tamsin Jones, alto, Sebastian Hill, tenor, and Ben Henry Watkins, bass. The orchestra will also perform Air on a G-String, and the choir will sing the motet Der Gerechte kommt Tickets cost £20 and are available at give.giftofsight.org.uk/Bach with Brass.
Thank you, Deborah. Slight apologies from me. I didn't give Deborah the chance to read that before I gave her. She struggled womanfully through it. Thank you. Right. Richard, your piece, please.
Y'all settle up for a Wild West Journey Barn Dance.
No!
Yes. Yee-haw! Dust off your cowboy boots and grab your hat for a Wild West-themed barn dance at Littleton Memorial Hall on Saturday, February the 21st. With live music and calling from Fiddler on the Hoof Cayley Band, organisers promise a high-energy evening of country dancing, laughter and toe-tapping tunes. Doors open at 6:30 with hot food served on arrival and dancing continuing until 9:30 p.m. Wild West fancy dress is encouraged and guests are welcome to bring their own booze. All funds raised will support the Boaz Project, a farm-based charity in Sutton, Scotney, that provides meaningful work and friendship for adults with learning disabilities. Boaz General Manager Stuart Palmer said, "The event gets more popular every year. Dancing and good food is a great way to shake off any winter blues. We always enjoy meeting new people, and some of our members are great dancers." Tickets cost £20 a person and can be booked online at www.boazproject.co.uk.
Thank you, Richard. So one or two other items coming up in weeks to come that you may be interested in. Three items from the Theatre Royal Winchester on the 14th of February. There's The Tiger Who Came to Tea, direct from the West End, the Olivia Award nominated smash hit show The Tiger Who Came to Tea returns on tour. Monday the 16th of February, the Big Royal General Knowledge Quiz, that's also at the Theatre Royal. And on Sunday the 22nd of February, Mark Simmons, Jest to Impress. Mark Simmons is back on tour in 2026 with Jest to Impress, a brand new show packed with even more expertly crafted one-liners alongside his trademark off-the-cuff jokes based on random audience suggestions. And then finally, Tuesday the 24th of February, the Winchester Film Society are showing Return to Dust, and that is at the Winchester Science Centre. Yes, and finally, before we go on to general news, let's have a look at the lighting up times for the coming week. So the sun, if there is any, will rise at about 7:30 and set again around 5:30 p.m. So, Deborah, could we have the first article, please?
Yes, this is entitled Campaigners Call Over Mental Health Services. A mental health campaigner is calling for urgent improvements to support services for men. Ashley Riley, who met Liberal Democrat MP Dr. Janny Chambers in Parliament, described his personal mental health issues to highlight the gaps in care across the UK. His struggles began with a brief panic attack and low mood, which quickly escalated into severe anxiety and depression. Ashley said, "Despite the much-needed increase in mental health awareness, there remains a deep chasm of care on Blue Monday 2026. I'm not a medic and I'm not a therapist, but I hear every day from men going through real life-changing mental health challenges. Unless they're at the point of wanting to harm themselves or considering ending their life, they're simply being left to it." He believes the current approach is failing countless men who need help before reaching crisis point. He said, "We know that 75% of UK suicides are men. That number will never change while the current provision of service remains. And while the government have recently published a men's health strategy, there remains an enormous lack of provision for men seeking support for their mental health." During his meeting with Dr. Chambers, Ashley discussed Blue Monday. This is the third Monday of January and is often described as the most depressing day of the year. Dr. Chambers said, "It was good to welcome Ashley to Parliament and hear his mental health story, one that is all too familiar to men across the UK. His blue sole shoes story needs to be heard, as it shows that poor mental health does not discriminate. It can happen to anyone at any time. That is why, as a Liberal Democrat spokesman for mental health, I'll be continuing to raise this issue and hold the government to account." According to the mental health charity Mind, one third of people who have experienced stress, depression, or anxiety become more unwell while waiting for support. Ashley said mental health is destroying men, their families, their communities and their lives. "I know from personal experience that over one in three people are reporting a deterioration in their mental health while waiting for an appointment for help."
Deborah Richard, please.
Well, let's cheer them up. Elections will not be axed. Voters across Hampshire will head to the polls in May after the government confirmed that elections will take place as scheduled. Elections for Hampshire and Winchester councils will go ahead following formal confirmation issued on January the 22nd by the Secretary of State for the Housing, Communities and Local Government. The announcement made by Right Honourable Steve Reid brings an end to speculation that planned local government reorganisation could lead to a delay in the vote. Speaking in the House of Commons, Mr. Reid described the changes as a landmark moment for local authorities. He said, "This is a once-in-a-generation reform that will transform local government for the better. Cutting two-tier bureaucracy means faster decisions on housing, simpler access to services, and more money going to potholes, tackling crime, and caring for older people instead of being lost to duplication." Leader of Hampshire County Council Nick Adams-King said, "I'm delighted that the government has made the right decision and that elections will be going ahead for those of us in Hampshire."
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
£200 million funds for baby health visits approved. Hampshire County Council has approved plans to spend hundreds of millions of pounds to continue providing vital baby health visiting and school nursing services across the county. The £200 million contract, which will run for 7 years, is designed to support families across all communities, especially those who are most vulnerable. The money will fund the county's public health nursing service, which delivers support from pregnancy through to early childhood. Health visiting services form a central part of the programme, offering guidance and practical help to families with babies and young children from pregnancy up to the age of five. This includes the Family Nurse Partnership, which provides intensive support to young parents, particularly those aged under 16. Alongside this, the service also covers school nursing, supporting children and young people from the age of 5 to 19. The service is available to all families in Hampshire. Currently, there are 69,173 babies and children aged 0 to 4, and 309,231 children and young people aged 5 to 18 living in the county who may benefit from the support. Provision is universal across Hampshire and is delivered mainly through home visits, community settings and schools. A key aim of the service is to deliver the Healthy Child Programme while also reducing health inequalities by targeting additional help at those vulnerable families. Hampshire County Council's Principal Public Health Officer, Joanna Lockhart, said the investment would save money in the long run by addressing problems early. She said, "Whilst that sounds like a lot of money, it provides a really good value for money service. The aim is to prevent and identify those needs at the early opportunity and prevent those needs from escalating further, where the cost could be greater." Council papers note that the contract may be affected. The local government reorganisation, which could lead to changes in the size, scope or legal structure of the agreement during its lifetime. The spending was approved on January the 20th by the Cabinet Member for Health and Wellbeing, Councillor Stephen Reid. Funding will come from the ring-fenced public health grant, with the new service due to run from April 2027 until March 2034.
Thank you, Jackie. This piece is headed "Arrogant Stance Over Proposals for 14 Homes." Plans for 14 new homes have been unveiled for Spencer's Farm in King Somborne. The outline application seeks permission to develop a 1.146 hectare site off Stockbridge Road on land formerly used for grazing. The site has been allocated for housing under the King Somborne Neighbourhood Plan. The application follows the refusal of an earlier proposal and aims to address the Borough Council's previous concerns. These included the size and mix of homes failing to meet neighbourhood plan objectives, the development footprint extending beyond the allocated area, and insufficient technical information related to drainage and ecology. River Moon say the revised scheme has been significantly redesigned. In a design and access statement, the company said, "We are striving to create a high-quality residential development on the western fringe of King Somborne. The updated proposal includes 6 two-bedroom homes, 6 three-bedroom homes and 2 four-bedroom homes, a mix which River Moon says directly matches the requirements of the neighbourhood plan. 4 of the 14 properties, representing 30% of the total, would be affordable." River Moon also highlighted the sustainability credentials of the scheme, stating buildings designed to reduce carbon emissions, delivering at least 31% reduction in carbon emissions beyond Part L 2013. It has been shown that the site is suitable to accommodate housing development to meet the borough's identifying needs. Resident John Young raised concerns about compliance with the neighbourhood plan, saying the neighbourhood development plan clearly states that no development above the 40-metre line. This application is trying to creep up to the 42-metre line. This is not acceptable. He also criticised the level of affordable housing, describing the proposal for 10 market homes and 4 affordable homes as a very arrogant stance to take, given the shortage of affordable housing in the Test Valley. Deborah, please.
New director will build on legacy of excellence. The new director of music has been appointed at Winchester Cathedral. Catherine Deans-Williams will take up the role in September. She's currently the organist and master of the choristers at Guildford Cathedral. She said, "Winchester Cathedral is ideally positioned at the heart of its historic city to embody the best of our Anglican musical tradition. The cathedral's ongoing commitment to its choral foundation as a mainstay of worship and mission, and its expansive, exciting ambitions for the future stand to enrich the musical, educational, and spiritual life of its diverse community. Although I'm sad to be leaving Guildford Cathedral, I'm delighted to be bringing my skills and experience to the post of Winchester Cathedral's Director of Music. I'm committed to building on the cathedral's legacy of musical excellence, to develop its future, and to live and work in communal fellowship, offering music in worship dedicated to the glory of God." Mrs. Deans-Williams was appointed to Guildford Cathedral in January 2008 and previously served as Director of Music at the Collegiate Church of St. Mary in Warwick. She made history as the first woman to hold her post in the Church of England and is currently Chair of the Royal College of Organists.
Deborah Richard, please.
MP call over social media. A Winchester MP is fighting for tighter restrictions on social media platforms used by children and young adults. Winchester MP for MP Dr. Danny Chambers, the Liberal Democrat mental health spokesperson, is calling for a ban on harmful social media use for under 16s and tighter restrictions for 16 to 18 year olds on platforms hosting extreme or sexual material. He's pushing an amendment to the Children's Wellbeing in Schools Bill that would introduce a default minimum age of 16 for social media use, along with film star ratings of up to 18 for the most harmful platforms. Dr. Chambers also called for mobile phones to be banned in schools. The Westgate School announced such a ban this week. He said, "After examining this issue in detail, as the Liberal Democrat mental health spokesperson, I firmly believe that social media is one of the biggest mental health risks to children. We've let childhood become an experimental ground for exploitation by these big tech companies, and this cannot continue. That's why we are tabling an amendment to the school's wellbeing and Children's Wellbeing in Schools Bill, calling for a ban on harmful social media for under 16s. I also want to see mobile phones banned in schools." The Liberal Democrats' plan would block access to platforms like TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram, and Facebook for anyone under the age of 16. Platforms that host particularly extreme or sexual content, including X, would be restricted to users aged 18 and over.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Battle lines drawn on golf course plan. Plans to turn in grazing land into part of an expanded golf course in the heart of a Hampshire's national park have sparked strong debate among local residents. Corhampton Golf Club has applied for planning permission to create four new golf holes on grassland off Shepherd's Farm Lane, Coxford, about 1.7 kilometres southwest of Corhampton. The land is currently used for sheep grazing and sits next to the club's existing course, entirely within the South Downs National Park. Despite discussions between the club and the South Downs National Park Authority before the application was submitted, the plans have split opinion. Around 60 objections have been lodged, many focused on traffic, road safety, and the amount of soil being brought in. Local resident Matt Avison said he was not against expanding the course in principle, but was deeply concerned by the scale of landfill importation and associated lorry movements, for what he described as a relatively small improvement. David Mead warned that Shepherd's Farm Lane could become unsafe with mud, stones and congestion. Karen Rousel described the proposal as an industrial-scale landfill operation masquerading as a course improvement project, arguing it was entirely inappropriate for a national park location. Club member Carolyn Scott also submitted an objection, saying she was concerned the plans amount to a backdoor application for an inert landfill site. She said she was very disappointed that the club was seeking to expand at the expense of the surrounding landscape. However, the application has also attracted strong support, with more than 70 letters backing the scheme. Supporters say the project would improve the landscape and help secure the club's future. John Hanley, who lives nearby, said, "We enjoy the fantastic views in the area and feel golf course expansion would only enhance this landscape with better water collection and woodland management." Stephen Griffin, a club member, acknowledged short-term disruption but said the long-term benefits outweighed the impact, describing Corehampton Golf Club as a valued sporting asset within both the local community and across the South Downs National Park. Another member, Roger Holmes, believes the changes could further improve biodiversity over time. The application will be decided at a future planning meeting. And there's a photo of the view of the proposed land, and it is a lovely view of rolling green fields.
Thank you, Jackie. This item is headed New Schools Plan Boost. Hundreds of new school places for children with special educational needs and disabilities will be created across the region following the approval of a major capital investment programme by Hampshire County Council. The £633 million Children's Services Capital Programme commits to improving school buildings and expanding capacity across the county. As part of the programme, 397 new SEND places will be created between 2026 and 2027 at a cost of £25.2 million. The investment forms part of a wider strategy to ensure that more children can be educated closer to home while easing pressure on specialist provision. Alongside new places, the council will continue to invest in children's social care, including adaptations to foster carers' homes and equipment and home adaptations to help disabled children and young people live more independently. Projects within the 2026-27 to 2028-29 capital programme are expected to create a further 3,410 school places, bringing the number of new school places created in Hampshire to 17,814 by September 2029. 10 new schools, including 2 special schools, are planned to open in Hampshire over the next 3 years, including Prince Philip Barracks at Borden, a 420-place primary school due to open in September 2028, Hazelton Farm Land east of Horndean, a 315-place primary school expected to open in September 2029, 1 Horton Heath, a 630-place primary school scheduled to open in September 2028. In addition, the government has committed funding for a new free special school in Hampshire. Deborah, please.
Major work for car parks. Winchester City Council's Cabinet has agreed to spend more than £1.5 million on major works on car parks across the district. Major works which will receive funding include plans to roll out an improvement to payment machines at car parks, the installation of mobile signal boosters throughout the Brooks and Chesil multi-storey car parks, repairs and remarking of several car parks, and a rebuild of the Middle Brook Street car park. Introducing the report, Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Lib Dem, Cabinet Member for the Climate and Nature Emergency, said it was an ambitious and exciting opportunity for Winchester, and that the paper asks us to continue investment. Addressing the Cabinet on Wednesday, January the 21st, Councillor Danny Lee, Green Party, asked if there would be a provision of more EV charging points across the district. He's also asked the council how it would lessen the environmental impact. I'm sure many of these things have been considered, but it is not apparent. I welcome that these be considered more in the future. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative, said, "The provision of safe, quality car parks is a sign that somewhere is looked after. I'm very pleased to see that the Kings Barton cycleway is in the plan, but it needs to link up with the cycle paths in the north and the areas of the town." Councillor Lerney said that there is an increase in EV charging provision across the district, noting that there are not spots such as the Pit Park and Ride, which could be upgraded. Answering a question from Councillor Lee regarding making sure investment across the district is equitable, she said, "It is worthwhile looking at the usage of these car parks. It's very important that we maintain usability of the car parks in the city. It is also where a great deal of funding for a lot of these projects comes from." She added that Winchester City Council is working to link the Kings Barton cycle lanes to the villages north of the city, saying, "It is useful if we can start promoting what would be a relatively low traffic route into the city, not only for cyclists but also for pedestrians." The Cabinet, all Lib Dem councillors, voted unanimously to agree all the recommendations in the report.
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
The city is bringing Van Gogh alive. One of the world's most visited multi-sensory art experiences has opened in Winchester. Opening on January the 22nd and running until March the 22nd, the Winchester Science Centre will host Van Gogh Alive. The 90-minute experience will see visitors immersed into Vincent van Gogh's masterpieces through the use of light, colour and sound in the centre's planetarium. The main immersive show will run for about 45 minutes, but guests are invited to spend time in the Sunflower Room. The opening night saw string quartet performances as well as interactive art sessions with people encouraging to draw along to instruction. Sessions of the experience are available to book at 4:30, 5:30 and 6:30pm and 7:30pm. Tickets are available for £30. For more information visit vangoghalive.co.uk.
Thank you. Jackie, please.
Candlelight yoga with quartet to return. An evening of candlelit yoga with live string music has proved so popular it's returning for a second year. Yoga by Candlelight with live string quartet, held in Winchester's Great Hall by the Bossard Quartet, transformed the historic venue into a tranquil retreat. Hundreds of candles lit the hall as the quartet performed a custom set list timed to a guided yoga flow, creating what organisers described as a sensory immersion. Amy Nichols from the Bossard Quartet said, "We were absolutely overwhelmed by the response to this event. Creating a musical landscape that supports the mindfulness of yoga was a special project for us, and the energy in the Great Hall was just incredible. We couldn't be happier to confirm two new dates in 2026 to bring this unique experience back to the Hampshire community." Yoga instructor Alex said, "Teaching yoga to the live accompaniment of the Bossard Quartet was a deeply grounding experience." Elise Campaglia, events programme manager for the Great Hall with Westgate Museum at Hampshire's Cultural Trust, said the night also showcased the venue's atmosphere and versatility. Elise added, "We're delighted with the success of this collaboration. Yoga by Candlelight proved to be the perfect way to showcase the magnificent acoustics and atmosphere of the Great Hall. It demonstrates how historic spaces managed by Hampshire Cultural Trust can host innovative and highly popular wellness and cultural events." Following the sold-out debut, the Bossard Quartet has announced the event will return in 2026, with two new dates already confirmed. The new dates are Wednesday, March the 18th, and Wednesday, September the 23rd, at the Great Hall.
Thank you, Jackie. This piece actually is quite significant because it features a certain Richard Martin. Fortunately, there is a photograph of the said Richard Martin, so we can confirm that it is a different Richard Martin to the one who was in the studio.
I was going through a bad patch.
Burglar jailed for invading victim's home. A man has been jailed for 40 months for a burglary on Battersley Road in Chandler's Ford. Richard Martin, 50, of the Dell, Southampton, was sentenced to 40 months in prison at Winchester Crown Court on Friday, January the 23rd, after pleading guilty at the same court on December the 17th. The burglary took place on Battersley Road at around 11:30 p.m. in September 2021. A man, later identified as Martin, entered a home wearing a woolen hat pulled down over his face while the occupants were in the kitchen. He stole two phones from the kitchen side before being confronted by a man in his 60s, one of the victims. Martin kicked the victim before fleeing the property. Police were notified of the incident and the stolen phones were tracked to Martin's address. Officers also identified a car registered to Martin travelling from Battersley Road back to his home. A DNA evidence collected from the scene matched Martin, further linking him to the burglary. Detective Constable Steve Jakes, the officer in the case, said, "We should all be able to feel safe and secure in our own homes, and a stranger invading that space can have a lasting impact on victims. I hope this sentence sends a clear message that we will deal with these crimes robustly and seek to bring offenders to justice. We will not tolerate this time of offending in our community. In this case, I would like to thank the victims for their quick thinking in tracking the phones. That line of inquiry assisted greatly in creating our case. I would urge anybody who is aware of or sees anything suspicious in our area that could be linked to a burglary to report it to us."
Just stitch up.
Yes, thank you. Deborah, please.
Monument work. People will be noticing a big change in the Buttercross in the next few weeks. After years of planning and negotiations, the medieval Winchester Monument will be swathed in scaffolding for restoration work. The City Council has been talking to Historic England and other agencies for several years about working on the cross in the High Street. Councillor John Tippett Cooper told the Town Forum, "I'm very pleased that we are nearing the work stage. It will start at the end of February and early March. Information boards will go up to tell people what's happening. It's taken several years for the work to get approval from Historic England, as it is a scheduled ancient monument."
Thank you, Deborah. Richard, please.
Police in prison crackdown. Winchester police have been undertaking major operations against shoplifting, drugs and crime in the city prison. Both initiatives have seen dozens of arrests over the last 9 months, a council meeting heard. 22 people have been dealt with for shoplifting, with two receiving community behaviour orders that bans them from certain areas. 4 people are still outstanding. Since April, there have been 555 reports of shoplifting, more than one a day in the city centre. Since October, offenders have spent 166 weeks in prison. Chief Inspector Corrine Bishop told the Town Forum that an officer is based at the prison in Romsey Road. Since the launch of Operation Goliath, 178 crimes have been reported, with most dealt with within the jail by adjudication by the governors. 45 cases led to increased sentences. On drugs, there have been 354 possession offences of mainly cannabis and cocaine. It looks like there's been a massive spike, but we've been really active in stopping and searching, said Chief Inspector Bishop.
Thank you, Richard. Jackie, please.
Pub closing after 20 years, but on the market. The future of a Hampshire country pub is uncertain after the landlords announced their departure. The Hinton Arms in New Cheriton, currently run by Lee and Fiona Mateer, recently announced that it will be closing on February the 15th. Game farmers by trade, Lee and Fiona took over the pub in 2023 after former landlord Roger Mateer died. Mr. Mateer had run the pub alongside his wife, Anne Mateer, for more than 20 years. The Hinton Arms is not only known for its lunch offering and family legacy, but also its annual car show, which was set up by Roger around 15 years ago and has grown every year. Fiona Mateer said, "We just couldn't imagine closing the doors when Roger passed away. Being game farmers by trade, this wasn't our natural habitat, but we took it on anyway. I think people will always remember the classic car show, and I hope it continues to be the community pub that it's always been. We would like to thank all of our customers and friends. It's been an amazing place for many years, and we've had many laughs. We wish future tenants all the best and hope they have as much fun as our family did. Since COVID, there has definitely been a change. It was a bit of a turning point, but we are very fortunate to have the Hinton Ampner National Trust House next door, so we have always been well supported by the visitors. The lunch trade since the summer months has also been phenomenal. The pub is being advertised by Christie & Co. for £50,000 per annum."
Thank you, Jackie. M3 closure for works at the weekend. The M3 will be closed in both directions this weekend to allow for work on Junction 9. The road will be closed from 9 p.m. on Friday, January the 30th, to 6 a.m. on Monday, February the 2nd, between Junction 8 and Junction 9 to allow for the installation of steel beams for new roundabout bridge decks. This work is part of the M3 Junction 9 improvement project and will also impact the A34 and A33. Another closure will take place from 9 p.m. on Friday, February the 13th, until 6 a.m. on Monday, February the 16th. As previously reported, a diversion route map is available and can be accessed on Google Maps. The council has reminded drivers operating large vehicles, lorries or freight travelling to and from the coast to use the strategic diversion via the A3 during the closures. Roadworks on the M3 are being carried out by National Highways as part of the new Junction 9 scheme, which has seen millions of pounds injected into the improvement of the junction. The works include changing and widening the junction to have free-flowing links, as well as building two new bridges on the gyratory with the aim to reduce congestion, improve safety and air pollution. There will be a separate 24-hour southbound closure on the A34 from Three Maids Hill and the A33 from the Carton Horses Junction. The closure will be in place from 9 p.m. on Saturday, February the 7th, 2026, until 9 p.m. on Sunday, February the 8th. Deborah, please.
Inquest after woman 73 struck by car. An inquest has opened into the death of a woman who died in Winchester after she was struck by a car. Alison Spall of Stockers Avenue, Tegdown, died at Stockbridge Road on Tuesday, January the 13th, a court heard. The inquest was opened at Winchester Coroner's Court on Thursday, January the 22nd, by Area Coroner Nicholas Walker. Mr. Walker said, "She was struck by a vehicle. Emergency services attended the scene, but there were no life-saving opportunities." A post-mortem has been carried out by forensic pathologist Dr. Megan Jenkins. She gave the preliminary cause of death as multiple injuries. Mr. Walker adjourned the inquest to November 26. It will be heard at Winchester's Coroner's Court. As previously reported, Hampshire Police were called just before 6 p.m. on Tuesday, January the 13th, to reports of a collision on Stockbridge Road between the junctions of Stony Lane and Butts Close. Officers warned drivers that the road would be closed for hours and urged motorists to avoid the scene. The crash involved a silver Mercedes A150. A police spokesman said, "We are issuing an appeal for witnesses and dashcam footage following a fatal collision in Winchester. As part of our investigation into the circumstances surrounding this collision, we would like to speak to any witnesses and anyone with dashcam or CCTV footage who have not already spoken to us."
for Richard, please.
State of toilets is criticised. A civic campaigner has blasted the city council for the continuing poor state of public toilet provision in the city's centre. Ian Tate, a former Tory city councillor, criticised the lack of baby-changing facilities in Market Lane toilets, closed because of antisocial behaviour by drug offenders. The changing room has been shut for some time, the town forum heard. Mr Tate added, Market Lane has extensive CCTV, so it should be possible to see who is abusing facilities. Three public loos at River Park have been vandalised and also out of action. I understand there are issues with electrical power. These loos are covered by two sets of CCTV. Why is it a small number of people have deprived the wider community of these facilities due to antisocial behaviour? The loos at the Brooks in Middles Brook Street have been closed for approaching 10 years due to antisocial behaviour. I've asked council officers what's happening. I've been told they will be brought back into use. I don't believe that is now the case. I don't understand why a key is given out to businesses in the Brooks Centre, so the loos are used, but not by the public. Town Forum Chair, Councillor Chris Westwood, said of Market Lane, it's difficult to prevent antisocial behaviour. The baby changing room is not lockable, unlike disabled toilets that have a key. There's nothing to stop people going in. We can't put cleaners in there where they will have to confront individuals. In Market Lane, the baby changing facilities have been put in the ladies. There's no room in the gents, the forum was told.
Thank you, Richard. And our final piece from Jackie, please.
Woeful action. A pub landlord near Winchester has criticised the government's changes to business rates. Matthew Todd, landlord of award-winning The Wanston Arms in Wanston, described the latest government support as woefully not enough for the pub trade. From April, pubs will get a 15% discount on their business rates bill from April, with increases frozen for 2 years. Mr. Todd said, I don't see how it's going to save the venues that are going to close. It's actually a very small amount that's being talked about. It's woefully not enough, I'm afraid. On Tuesday, Treasury Minister Dan Tomlinson said the three-year relief package would be worth £1,650 for the average pub in 2026-7. But Mr. Todd said the wider business rate system was fundamentally broken. He said, the business rates valuations that have been implemented this year from April the 1st are completely flawed. So they have to stop, and that process has to be reviewed and changed. For example, my pub has gone up by 87% in its business rate valuation. Where does that come from? That's the bit that's fundamentally flawed, and that's the permanent change that needs to happen. Acknowledge that the new rateable values they're imposing on high street pubs and small businesses are completely flawed, and don't implement them ahead of looking at a way of calculating realistic and viable business rate valuations for pubs going forward. The support will also apply to music venues, but not for restaurants, cafes or other hospitality venues. The Wanston Arms has won national accolades, including CAMRA, that's the Campaign for Real Ale, Pub of the Year in 2019. 4 years earlier, it had been shut and nearly derelict.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week, but before we go, another reminder that if you have any problems with your recording, the contact number is on the key fob attached to your memory stick. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible? Well, thanks to all the support team for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And, of course, many thanks to our readers today. Deborah.
Goodbye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Jackie.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter. Until next time, goodbye.